All right. So good morning, everyone, and welcome to this final part of the series of the Neshama of Tishrei. We've spent some time every Wednesday going through a different yomtiv to do with the month of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and today we're going to do Sukkos, Shmini Atzeres, and some Simchas Torah as well. Just before we begin, today's learning is Le'ilui Nishmas in memory of Chana Bas Bela, Bas Bela. I wanted to wish Leah Arichut Yamim, long life, and the Neshama Shehaven Aliyah, and the learning today should be in her Schut. All right, so Sukkos is known as Sukkos, which is the Yom Tov of Sukkos, where we sit in the Sukkah, we shake Lulav and Esrog. But the way we refer to Sukkos in the Tefillah, in the Davening, is Zman Simchaseinu, which means the time of our joy. Sukkos is the Yom Tov of Simcha, the Yom Tov of joy. Now, the truth is, every Yom Tov, there's an obligation to be happy. Every Yom Tov, there's a biblical obligation, actually, to have Simcha. That's Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. Okay, Rosh Hashanah is an interesting discussion. There's actually a chiyuv, an obligation to have Simcha or not. Let's leave Rosh Hashanah out for a moment. But every Yom Tov, there's an obligation to have Simcha. And it's actually a practical obligation, just to point this out. It's not the point of the shir, but just from a halachic point of view, simcha is not only a feeling, it's not only a sort of a feeling of joy, but it's actually a practical obligation, which for men involves drinking wine every day of the Yom Tov. So when it comes to Sukkos, including Chol HaMoed, every day of the Yom Tov, a man is obligated to drink a reviyas of wine. For women, the obligation is for their husbands to buy them clothing and jewelry. And for children, the obligation is for their parents to buy them treats and sort of sweets and things like that. So every sort of, that basic idea is a person has to do things on Yom Tov, which makes them besimcha, which makes them happy. So that's every Yom Tov. Every Yom Tov, there's an obligation of simcha, besamachta, bechagecha, as we'll get to later on, the sort of the different levels of simcha of every Yom Tov. But Sukkos is the only Yom Tov, Sukkos and Shmini Atzeres, and in Chutz La'aretz Simchas Torah, we refer to it as Zman Simchaseinu, the time of our joy, which seems to imply that although every day of the year there's an obligation to be besimcha, as we'll see in a moment, simcha is a fundamental thing to Yiddishkeit in general. When we serve Hashem, to our avodas Hashem, we have to be besimcha. And although there's a bigger obligation on every Yom Tov, but nevertheless, for some reason, the essence of simcha, sort of the highest level of joy, is brought out on specifically the Yom Tov of Sukkos, which is interesting. It's not so understood why. On a simple level, if you think about it, Pesach, we went out of Egypt, we were saved. Shavuos, we got the Torah. What happened on Sukkos already? Sukkos is to remember that Hashem protected us with clouds of glory, or with hats, whatever the different opinions are. It doesn't seem to be like a massive cause for celebration. So what I want to do during this year is to try and understand why Sukkos is the ultimate simcha, why Sukkos is referred to as Zman Simchaseinu. Okay. But before we do that, I think it's important, because to understand how Sukkos is the ultimate simcha, we need to first of all understand what simcha actually means. Now, as I said before, from a halachic point of view, the sort of practical things you need to do on a Yom Tov to be besimcha. I'm talking about now more philosophically. What does it mean for a Yid, for a Jew to actually be besimcha? What does that actually mean? In general, every day of the year. When we understand what simcha means every day of the year, then we can now bring it back to Sukkos and understand how Sukkos is the essence of that and takes that to a whole new level. So first of all, as I mentioned, simcha is not just a nice thing. It's not just, we'll be happy. It's a nice thing to be happy. Simcha is a fundamental thing to Yiddishkeit. In fact, in this week's parsha, Parshas Kisavon, we read about the terrible things, the toichacha, we read the curses, the terrible things that Hashem will bring upon the Jewish people if we don't listen to his mitzvahs. And it says at the end, why do all these things happen? Tachas, the first source here, tachas, because you would not serve the Lord your God, in joy and gladness over the abundance of everything. which on a literal level means that Hashem is punishing you because you didn't serve him when it was good for you. When everything was going great, you didn't serve Hashem. So therefore, Hashem is going to bring upon you all these terrible curses. But the truth is, but the Rambam learns this pasuk and says, no, the pshat is, the reason why Hashem is bringing all these punishments is not because you didn't serve him. It's because you didn't serve him besimcha. You didn't serve him with joy. In other words, simcha is so critical that even if you do everything right, but you just do it because I have to do it, and you know, whatever, sort of forced to do it in a sort of depressing way, then Hashem will still punish you. In other words, in order to get saved from Hashem's punishments from the Toichacha, we have to serve Hashem b'simcha, which comes out how fundamental this idea is of serving Hashem b'simcha. And of course, we have the famous pasuk, we say it every day in davening, Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, you have to serve Hashem with joy, boyul l'fanov birnana, come to his presence with song. And it's basically telling us that every time we serve Hashem, we need to do it out of simcha. Now, what does it mean to serve Hashem? As the Rambam tells us, serving Hashem means in every single thing that we do. A Yid is constantly serving Hashem. Whether we're learning Torah, whether we're doing a mitzvah, whether we're eating, we're drinking, we're sleeping, all of that, as the Rambam explains in Hilchos Deis, is a part of serving Hashem. As the pasuk says, "B'chol derachecha de'eyu," you shall know Hashem in all your ways. You eat for the sake of serving Hashem. You sleep for the sake of serving Hashem. Kol ma'asecha yul shem shamayim. All of your behavior should be l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. So it comes out that a yid is constantly serving Hashem. And if you have to serve Hashem with simcha, that then means that a person has to always be besimcha. Because we're always serving Hashem, we always have to be happy. So the question is, what is simcha? Okay, what is simcha? Now, the Rambam, let's have a look at the Rambam. This Rambam actually appears in the laws of Sukkah, in Hilchas Sukkah V'lulav. The very last halacha in the Rambam is Hasimcha sheyismach adam ba'asiyas ha-mitzvah u'ba'avas ha-keil she-tziva bohem. The joy which a person derives from doing good deeds and from loving Hashem, who has commanded us to practice them, avoido gedoylohi, says the Rambam. It's a big avoido. It's a big service, which can be translated in two ways. It can mean, first of all, it translates over here in Sefaria, it's a supreme form of worship. In other words, it's like a very high level of avodas Hashem. But another translation of that is, it's a big avoda, meaning it's hard work. Being happy is not simple. It's not easy. It's a very difficult thing to actually be happy. Whoever holds themselves back from this simcha, royally is fitting that it should be punished. As we just said, Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, tachas ha-shoyavadetos Hashem elikecha, b'simcha v'tuv leivav. So he says, "V'chol ha-megis." Now, so what does it mean to be happy? So here the Rambam gives us a little bit glimpse, a glimpse of what simcha actually means, and then I want to develop it. V'chol ha-megis daitoi v'chol le-kovid la'atzmoi u'mischabed be'einov. Anyone who is arrogant and insists on self-glory on such occasions, v'mekoymos elu choyte v'shoyte, is a sinner and a fool. In other words, sometimes when we're besimcha, part of simcha means that you're a little bit let go, as we'll see soon. And sometimes that puts you in a situation where you look a little bit crazy, right? We dance our kafas, simchas Torah. We don't look the most normal. Doesn't mean that you should be wild, chas v'shalom, as we'll see soon. But in other words, it's sort of not, almost like degrading yourself. So the Rambam says, anyone who's arrogant and insists on self-glory when instead they're supposed to be besimcha is a sinner and a fool. That's what Shloima HaMelech, King Solomon, tells us. V'omar, he says, Al tishaber lifnei melech, do not glorify yourself in the presence of the king, meaning in the presence of Hashem. V'chol ha-mashbil atzmoy, on the other hand, anyone who humbles himself, u'meikil gufoy, v'mekoymos elu, and sort of like, you know, let's go a little bit in these times, in these places, that's a great person, that's an honorary person, that's someone who's serving Hashem with love. As we see with David HaMelech, let's give a few lines here. The greatest honor, the greatest greatness that a person could reach is to be happy before Hashem. Shenemar, as it says about David HaMelech, V'HaMelech David mefazes u'mecharker lifnei Hashem. At the king David, he was like so to speak, going crazy. He was leaping and dancing before Hashem, and we'll develop that story in a moment. But we see that David HaMelech made a fool out of himself, out of being happy for Simcha in front of Hashem. And the Rambam says it's an unbelievable thing. And with that, the Rambam concludes the laws of Sukkah, of Shofar, Sukkah, and Lulav. Which is interesting, because the Rambam in this halacha is not talking about Sukkot. It's talking about in general. A general person has to be happy, as we mentioned before. But obviously, there's a reason why the Rambam puts this halacha in the laws of Sukkot. Because Sukkot, as we said, is Man Simchaseinu. So everything the Rambam describes over here, although it applies on a daily basis, and the more so it applies on every Yom Tov, but for sure the essence of that, and it's taken to a whole new level on the Yom Tov of Sukkot, which is why the Rambam puts this in the laws of Sukkot, as we'll soon see in a moment. So what does Simcha actually mean? Let's develop this Rambam. Many times people think that Simcha, and this is a fundamental mistake, if anyone has any questions, by the way, please feel free to put it in the chat. I'm happy to answer any questions. So many times people think that Simcha is connected to the concept of taiva, the concept of pleasure. We think if you would have things, if only we would be out of lockdown and we'd be able to go to hairdressers, to barbers. I'm just saying that example because the news has leaked that might open soon. You know, if only we had this, if only we had that, we would be happy, right? But the truth is, it's not like that. And we find a fascinating thing, because since Simcha is so fundamental, we find that very early on in history, there were three people who attempted to reach Simcha, who attempted to reach this level of true Simcha. Two of them failed, and one of them was successful. The three people are Chava, Noach, and David HaMelech. So Chava is created. She wants to serve Hashem. See, the literal meaning of the story is she sinned. She wanted a fruit, so she ate from the fruit, right? But it's much deeper than that. Chava wanted to serve Hashem properly. She wanted to serve Hashem with Simcha. So she thought, what brings me Simcha? What brings joy? If I have a good fruit, if I have pleasure, if I indulge, if I feel good, that's Simcha. So therefore, says the Pasuk, Vateira isha ki toiva eitz lemachol. The woman saw, Chava saw, that it was good fruits. Vichitayva hulei naim was pleasurable to the eyes. The nechma be'etz lahaskil, and the tree was a source of wisdom. Vatikach mipirioi vatoichal, she took from the fruit and she ate it. Vatiten gam liisha imo vayoichal, she gave it to her husband, Adam as well, and he also ate. So she made a fundamental mistake. She confused simcha with pleasure. What's the difference? Pleasure is about indulging myself. It's about ego. Now, not necessarily a bad thing, always. But it's not joy. That's not simcha. You eat a good apple, or it wasn't actually an apple. It was either a grape, or some people say it was an esrog. Whatever it was, she saw a good piece of fruit. She thought that's going to bring her simcha. That's going to help her serve Hashem out of joy. In other words, she thought that simcha comes from things. Comes from things outside of me that make me feel good. And that's not simcha. What was her mistake? Because real simcha means to go out of yourself. That's what real simcha means. Real simcha means to go beyond your ego. Simcha is not about feeding your ego. Simcha is not about enhancing your ego and having something good and yummy. Simcha is about going beyond your yeshus, your gaiva, your ego. That's what real simcha is. Comes along Noach, and Noach makes the opposite mistake. Noach says, okay, if simcha is all about leaving yourself, if simcha is all about transcending the self, going away from your ego, going away from your yeshus, so you know what I'll do? I'll get completely drunk. As we know, what happened after the flood, Noach comes out of the teva, he plants a vineyard, and he gets completely drunk to the extent he has no idea what's happening with himself. So Noach thinks that's simcha, because now I don't even feel myself anymore. I've totally lost myself. I've totally gone out of myself. It's beautiful. It's amazing. That's real simcha. Unlike Chava, who thought simcha was indulgence, was pleasure, taking care of the self, going into, no, on the contrary, let's get rid of myself. Let's get rid of the ego entirely. Let's go get completely drunk. I won't even know I exist. And that's real simple. And obviously he was wrong. Obviously he was wrong. Why? Why was he wrong? Because simcha, yes, it's true that simcha means that you go out of yourself. But simcha also means you go out of yourself and you connect to something higher. Simcha doesn't mean to lose consciousness. Simcha doesn't mean that you don't know what's flying with yourself. It doesn't mean to get drunk, as Noach thought it was. Real simcha means you go out of yourself in order to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem, to something higher than yourself. And for that, you need to be focused. It's just that the focus is not on you. The focus is on something which transcends you. Chava thought simcha means that you're focusing on yourself, focusing on your ego. Take a good piece of fruit and enjoy. That's simcha. Noach thought simcha means to lose focus altogether, to totally just be unconscious, totally lose the sense of self. Where both of them were wrong is simcha means you have to be very focused, but not focused on yourself, but focused on something higher than yourself. What does that mean? So let's go to the story that the Rambam referenced. The Rambam told us a story, referenced a pasuk about David HaMelech. And I want to just go through the story. I think it's a very, very fundamental story. The story is when David HaMelech conquered Yerushalayim. So you have to understand, first of all, just give you context, historical context. When the Jewish people went into Eretz Yisrael with Yahushua, they didn't conquer the whole Eretz Yisrael. There were many enemies left. The Pelishtim were around. They were constantly attacking the Jewish people. Yerushalayim wasn't even conquered. The capital of Israel was not conquered. For hundreds and hundreds of years, the Jewish people had not fully conquered and settled the land. Comes along David HaMelech. He gets rid of all the enemies of the Jewish people. He totally gets rid of the Pelishtim, finally. He conquers Yerushalayim, establishes the capital, and now he's ready to bring the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, which contains the Luchais, and bring it to Yerushalayim, and build the Beis HaMikdash, and a place where the Aron will be housed. So the Tanakh describes to us in Sefer Shmuel Beis Perek Vav, the procession, the celebration. You have to understand. Finally, we have the whole Israel, we have the Yerushalayim, we're ready to build the Beis HaMikdash. And what happened? Let's read a few psukim over here. It says, Vayisoeyu mi Beis Avinodov asher begiva im Orelikim. They carried it from the house of Avinodov, which was in Giva, with the Orim. And then it says like this: the David v'chol Beis Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Hashem. David and the house of the Jewish people, in other words, the Jewish people, were mesachakim. Now, mesachakim literally means like laughing or jesting or playing in front of Hashem. B'chol atzei b'roishim u'b'chinoirois u'b'nevolim u'b'tufim menanim u'tzeltzolim, all different types of fancy instruments, harps, all different types of instruments it describes here, and we're having a great time. What happens? A tragedy. What happens is they come to a place. Now, we know the Oroim, David, at this procession, made a very big mistake. And there's a reason, and that's not relevant to the shir. He did something wrong, and the punishment was he was going to forget this halacha that everyone knows. We know that when the Aron was traveling in the Midbar, it was not allowed to be put on a wagon. It had to be carried. It was considered not honorable to the Aron to put it on a wagon. Like nowadays, you don't just put a Sefer Torah into a car, someone carries it, right? So you don't just put the Aron into a car, into a wagon. And David HaMelech made a mistake here. He put the Aron into a wagon. And the Aron had a tremendous power. It says the Aron used to fly. As we know that when he used to carry the Aron, it wasn't that they carried the Aron carried them. And we know the story when they crossed the Yarden, they flew, the Koyanim were carrying the Aron, flew over the Yarden, and the Aron carried them, etc. So what happened was the Aron started to like lift itself up from the wagon a little bit. It was like it was standing up for its own honor. And what happened was there was a person by the name of Uzzah. And Uzzah saw the Aron was like almost about to fall off the wagon, it looked like. So he right away went to put his hand to stop the urine from falling. It's like when someone's doing Hagban Shul and suddenly they're a little bit shaky, the whole shul runs over. Like, oh my gosh, the Sefer Torah is about to fall. Right? So what happened was, because he did that, it was considered to be a lack of respect for the urine that he touched it, and he died on the spot. He dropped dead. And obviously, the whole celebration stopped. It was a tragedy. Uzzah passed away. And what happened was, David HaMelech decided something's wrong going on over here. He puts the urine in someone's house called Oyvid Edoy Magiti for 3 months. And he has to rethink this whole procession. Then he tried again. Procession number 2. And what happened was, he took the urine. Here in Pasuk Yud Beis it says, Vayal es urine o elikim mi beis Oyvid Edoim ir David besimcha. They carried it from the house of Oyvid Edoim to the city of David with simcha. This is the first time in the story we have the word simcha. And what happened was, every 6 steps they took, they stopped, they put down the aron, and they brought a carbon. And here it says, David mecharker b'chol oiz lifnei Hashem. David HaMelech was swaying, he was making himself absolutely crazy before Hashem. And it goes on and says they were blowing a shofar, and it came to the ear David, and Michal bas Shaul, Michal, the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, who was the wife of David, saw David HaMelech making an absolute fool of himself. It says, and she was upset at it. What kind of thing is this? You're making a fool out of yourself. He finishes the procession, he comes home, he's in a great mood, and his wife meets him at the door and she's not happy. And she says, what are you doing? You made a fool out of yourself. My father, Shaul HaMelech, was much more honorable than you. It's not the way a king should act. David HaMelech turns to Michal and he says a very harsh statement. He says, tell me, who did Hashem want, me or your father? Right? Shaul HaMelech died. He was killed in battle. Hashem was upset with him. And then Hashem made David HaMelech a king. What are you telling me to be like your father? Hashem obviously wanted me, not your father. Which is an incredibly harsh thing to say. Michal was actually punished as a result of this. What's going on over here? What's the discussion? What are these 2 processions? What's the discussion between David HaMelech and Michal? Do you think someone as great as David HaMelech would just, you know, say, oh, I'm much better than your father? I mean, what kind of arrogance is that? What does that even mean? So the pshat is this. David HaMelech, during the first procession, made a similar mistake to Chava. If you notice, it doesn't say the word simcha in the first procession. It says they were mesachakim. They were having a great time. They were having pleasure. The simcha wasn't about anything higher. In fact, the simcha was more in the spirit of they won wars, they had their capital, they had land. It was much more about their accomplishments. And therefore, tragedy struck. Because if you go too far with pleasure, if you go too far with indulgence and the self and the ego, and it's all about you, that leads to destruction. That's not simcha. That's terrible. Which, I mean, the equivalent would be if you have a, hypothetically speaking, obviously, if you have a shul on Simchas Torah, which instead of being focused on the Torah is focused on, you know, getting drunk and just having a good time, that's terrible. That's not simcha. That's destructive. That's what the problem was with the first procession. Therefore, David HaMelech comes the second procession and he says, well, let's change this whole thing around. Let's do 2 things. First of all, we're going to forget about ourselves. It's not going to be about us. It's going to be about Hashem. It's going to be about going out of ourselves, which is why David HaMelech was mecharki. He totally went nuts. Not in a bad way, not in a wild way, but in a way that he demeaned himself, as the Rambam says. He didn't look honorable. Why? Because he was going out of himself. He was going out of his ego. But at the same time, he remained extremely focused. Every 6 steps, stopped, brought a carbon, reminded everybody, why are we doing this? For who are we doing this? And so he fixed up both the mistake of Chava and the mistake of Noach. The mistake of Chava was that it was about herself, it was about her own ego. He said, let's go totally out of ourselves. And the mistake of Noach was just totally with a lack of focus. He says, let's be extremely focused. He comes home And Michal says to him, what's going on over here? You're going totally, you made yourself demeaned. So he says, who does Hashem want, Shaul or me? What did he mean by that? What was Shaul's mistake? Shaul HaMelech, the first Jewish king, where did he go wrong? He used his intellect too much. He was a great man, a great tzaddik. Problem is, when it came time to destroy Amalek, Hashem told him, you have to destroy everything. And he kept the animals alive. Why? Because it made sense to him. Why should I kill the animals? Let's use these animals for sacrifices. So he used his rationale. He used the seichel too much. David HaMelech turns to his wife Michal and he says, Hashem doesn't want that. Hashem wants us to go out of ourselves, to transcend our rationale, to transcend our intellect. That's what it means to serve Hashem. That's what Hashem wanted. That's why he made me king, like he wanted me. He wants my derech and avodas Hashem. Don't be like Shaul, who's too, on his level, obviously, stuck in himself, in his own mind. Go out of our minds. Go out of yourself. That's what simcha means. To go beyond yourself, to transcend the self. And that's what simcha always means. But especially when it comes to Sukkos. We have the following idea on Sukkos. Sukkos, as we said, is called Zman Simchoseinu. At the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a very special event that would happen every night of Sukkos, which was centered around the drawing of the water. So just to give you a little bit of background, every day in the Beis HaMikdash, they would bring a carbon tumi, the daily sacrifice, and together with that, they had to pour wine on the Mizbeach. It was called Nisuch HaYayin. Pouring wine, a libation. On Sukkos, it doesn't actually say this clearly in the Torah, but we learn it out from Torah Shebal Peh. We learn it out that you have to bring, it's a tradition, Halacha Moshe Mesinai, that you have to pour water as well, besides for the wine, you have to pour water on the Mizbeach as well. And what would they do? They would dance an entire night. It was called Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which means the rejoicing around the drawing of the water. So as a preparation to drawing the water, they would draw it from Shiloach spring. If you go to Israel now, you can go and see it. It's near Ir David. You can see it exactly where they drew the water. It's unbelievable. It's still there. And they went down in the morning, so they would dance the entire night. And the Gemara describes the simcha was unbelievable. They would juggle fire. They would light lamps. They would dance. It would be unbelievable. So much so. The Gemara says, "Mi shalei ra simchas beis hashoeva, whoever never saw the simcha of the drawing of the water, never saw simcha in their life. Never saw true joy. That was true joy. And what would they do? And it would hit dawn. They would all go down to the Shiloach spring and draw water and pour that water on the mizbeach. So you ask, you're thinking to yourself, what's going on up here? What exactly were they dancing about? What, you're drawing water? Okay, it's a mitzvah, like every mitzvah. Wait, do we dance a whole night before we put on tefillin? Do we dance a whole night before Shabbos starts? Wait, what's up with this tremendous simcha about drawing water? What's the idea then? And the truth is, it goes down to the essence of what we were saying before. What's the difference between simcha, which comes... Now, first of all, let's backtrack for a second. Every day there was a mitzvah to pour wine. You can imagine, if it was a mitzvah to pour wine, they had simcha, because every mitzvah you do has to be done with simcha, right? But nowhere near the level of simcha they had when they drew water. Why not? What's the difference between wine and water? Wine naturally makes a person happy. In other words, you drink wine, you feel good. It makes you feel a little bit elated, a little bit happy. It's a natural thing. Water does not make you happy. You need it. You need water in order to survive. But it's not particularly associated with tremendous simcha. People don't sit down and say l'chaim on water. It's a drink that you need to survive, right? In fact, there's even a whole discussion. If you're drinking water and then you're not really thirsty, do you even have to make a bracha? Okay, separate discussion. In other words, there's very little taste to it. There's very little joy associated with water. But that's exactly the point. Because normally the simcha in the Beis HaMikdash, and normally our simcha is associated with what we understand. In other words, just like it makes sense that when you drink wine, you get happy, so too, when I understand the greatness of something, when I understand the preciousness of a mitzvah, when I understand what I'm doing, I understand the spiritual significance, the natural result of that is that I'm excited about it, I'm passionate about it. So it's like wine making me happy. It's something which makes sense that it should make me happy when I understand. So in other words, wine is always associated in Kabbalah with bina, with understanding. Because just like wine makes you happy, when you understand something, it makes you happy. It makes you happy to do it because you understand. You relate to it. Something which you can relate to. Comes along Sukkos, Zman Simchaseinu, the essence of what joy is. And Hashem tells us, no. Don't be happy over wine, be happy over water. Meaning, it doesn't make any sense you should be happy over water. The only reason why you would be happy over water is because Hashem says so. Usha'aftem mayim b'sosoin, the pasuk says. Draw water with joy. That's it. Hashem wants us to be happy, so we're happy. You think to yourself, what kind of happiness is that? Which happiness is greater? And when I'm happy because I understand something, because I relate to it, or because I'm happy because Hashem commanded me to be happy? So normally you would think, well, obviously if I relate to something, that's more happy. No, on the contrary. When I'm happy because I understand something, so that simcha is relative, is limited to how much I understand. And since my understanding will always be limited because I'm a human being, therefore my simcha will always be limited. But when I'm happy, not because I relate to it, you know, it's even taking the idea we said before about simcha not being about indulgence and taking it a step further. It's not even about spiritual indulgence. It's not even about me spiritually relating to the idea. Because if that's what it's about, it's limited to how much I relate to it, how much I understand it, how much I understand the depth of it. When I'm happy because Hashem says to be happy, that's real simcha. That means I've gone out of myself. I've transcended my mind. This is a simcha which goes beyond logic, which transcends the limitations and the bounds of our mind. And that's why never saw true joy. Because what's real simcha, as we said before, when David HaMelech completely let go of himself. Yes, of course, extremely focused on Hashem, extremely focused on what you're doing. But the prerequisite to that is to totally let go of yourself, totally let go of your ego and your boundaries and your confines, and just give yourself over to something higher. Give yourself over to Hashem. That is what the Simchas Beis HaSheva was all about. That's what Zman Simchaseinu is all about. Nowadays as well, we may not have a Beis HaMikdash, we may not have Nisuch HaMayim, but the idea of Nisuch of Mayim, of water, is still here on Sukkos. In fact, on Sukkos, we're judged about water. On Shmini Atzeres, we say a tefillah called Geshem. Why? Because it's all about water. It's all about serving Hashem, being happy, not because of me, not because this gives me something, not because I understand it, rather because I'm just totally given over to Hashem in a way which transcends logic, in a way which transcends all boundaries, which is why there's a famous expression, simcha poiretz geder, joy, happiness breaks through all boundaries. The question still remains, why Sukkos? So we understand now why, how on Sukkos we see this idea of true simcha, but why Sukkos? Why is there this tremendous simcha, totally lemaila mitam vadas, higher than logic, higher than nature, higher than all boundaries? Why on Sukkos? So in order to understand that, we need to understand the calendar, the Jewish calendar, at least the first half of the year. Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Tisha B'Av, Rosh Hashanah, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, culminating with Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, and Simchas Torah. These are not just random things that happen to happen in that order. There's a very specific order here. The beginning starts with Pesach, as we know. The first month of the year is actually Nisan, Pesach. That's the beginning of the journey. Continues with Shavuos, continues with Tisha B'Av, continues with Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and then finishes and gets to its highest level on Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, and Simchas Torah. What does this all mean? So I mentioned before, this idea of being happy on a Yom Tov is not unique to Sukkos. There's an obligation to be happy on every Yom Tov. But the truth is, the Torah doesn't explicitly say that about every Yom Tov. We learn it out. The Torah Shabbat, we interpret the Torah to tell us that you have to be happy every Yom Tov. By Pesach, the Torah does not say the word Simcha even once. Now, we have to be happy on Pesach, but it doesn't explicitly tell us joy to be happy on Pesach. On Shavuos, the Torah tells it to us once, About sukkahs, the Torah tells it to us three times. What's the reason for that? So the simple reason is, we know that the Yomim Tovim revolve around agriculture. Pesach is Chag Ha'ovid, is in the spring, in Israel at least, where things begin to grow. So it didn't really grow yet, so I'm not so happy. So I'm happy because it's beginning to grow, so you make a Yom Tov, but I don't see the result yet. What's Shavuos? Shavuos is Chag HaKotzir, is the Yom Tov of harvest. So I already see that it's grown, I see what type of fruit I have, it's good, it's ripe, it was a good year, so I'm a little bit more happy. Come Sukkot, what's Sukkot? But the problem with Shavuos is, I don't have it in my house yet, still in the field. What's Sukkot? Sukkot is Chag HaOsif, the Yom Tov of gathering, when I gather in all the produce and bring it into the house, which is why I'm tremendously happy. So it began with Pesach, where it began to grow. So I wasn't so happy because I don't know how it's going to turn out. Comes to Shavuos, I have it, it's harvested, I see it, I'm happy, but I don't actually have it yet in my own home. Comes Sukkot, that's the end of it, it's Chag HaOsif, I've gathered everything. Question is, I mean, it's very nice. Most of us, and probably all of us, are not farmers. And that's what Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot is all about grain. There must be something deeper here. The answer is like this. The explanation goes like this. Grain is also connected to the concept of mitzvahs. In other words, this journey of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, known as the Shalosh Regalim, is the journey of solidifying our connection to Hashem, our connection to Torah and mitzvahs. What's Pesach? Pesach is the Yom Tov of Emunah, the Yom Tov of faith. What does Emunah actually mean? Emunah means, don't understand it, I don't relate to it, and Emunah actually can be by somebody who's on a very low spiritual level. As the Jewish people were, Pesach time. So on the one, they were at a very low spiritual level, as we know, they were on the 49th level of impurity, and Hashem schlepped them out of Mitzrayim, and they followed Hashem into the desert, as we say in Rosh Hashanah davening, Lechteich acharai b'midbar be'eretz lo zeruah. We had Emunah, we followed Hashem into the desert. So Emunah on the one hand is very deep. It comes from the deepest parts of our neshama. But on the other hand, the problem with Emunah, of just Emunah, is because it's so deep, it doesn't always translate itself into action. It can sometimes remain a little bit removed from who we are. Like the Gemara says, the example the Gemara brings, you have a ganav, you have a thief. Right before he steals, he davens to Hashem and he should be successful. So what does that mean? And by the way, we all laugh when we hear that, right? But the truth is, we're all like that, actually, in a way. Because what does that mean? You have somebody who believes in Hashem, otherwise, he wouldn't be davening to him. At the same time, and he's believing in Hashem, he's doing something that Hashem says not to do. And we all do that, right? We all believe in Hashem, and we all do things that Hashem doesn't want us to do, right? So we're all that ganav who daven before we steal. We just don't steal, but it just in sort of other areas of our life, right? That's the problem with Emunah. We don't know, just because a Yid has, so Emunah is the foundation of this. Emunah is the beginning, the birth of the Jewish nation on Pesach. Is all about faith, it's all about Emunah, because that's the foundation of the Jewish people. But you can't be happy yet because you don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know if that faith will translate itself into a commitment to do what Hashem actually wants. Maybe they'll remain like the thief who davens before he steals. That's why Pesach is not such a high level of sin. Comes along Shavuos. What happens on Shavuos? Shavuos, after Sfiras HaOmer, the Jewish people have worked on themselves. Come Shavuos, and now they say, Naseh V'Nishma. They commit to do what Hashem wants. So now there's Simcha. Now there's more Simcha. Why? Because just like the grain, in the spring, we didn't know how it's going to turn out. That's why we weren't so happy. Spiritually, that means the Emunah. Yeah, it's the foundation. Spring is the foundation. We don't know how it's going to turn out. But now it comes Shavuos, and we harvest the grain. We see that this Emunah has now translated itself into a commitment to serve Hashem. So now we can be very happy, right? Now we can be besimcha because we see how this is going. It translates itself into actual commitment, not just faith, but commitment. However, they didn't actually keep it yet. So it's like they harvested the grain, but it's not in their house yet. So they committed, but we didn't actually keep it yet. After we go by a few months and we actually do mitzvahs. We actually keep what Hashem wants. Then comes Sukkot. We can have the real v'samachta b'chagecha. We can be really happy because now we actually have the grain. We didn't only commit, but we've seen that we followed through with our commitment. We actually brought the grain into our house. We actually keep Torah. We actually learn Torah. We actually keep mitzvahs. And that's why Sukkot is the ultimate Yom Tov of Simcha. It's all very nice. The problem is it's not true. Both historically and now, right? What happened historically after Shavuos? Tisha B'Av happened. What's Tisha B'Av? Tisha B'Av is the Meraglim, the Egel HaZov, which happened on Shavuos B'Tammuz, right? When Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos. In other words, all the 3 weeks, all the negativity happened. We didn't follow through with our commitment. That's historically. Nowadays also, what you think from Shavuos to Sukkot, we're perfect. After we say Nasa V'Nishma every year on Shavuos, when we re-accept upon ourselves the Torah, suddenly we're Tzadikim Gemurim and we never do an Aveira again all the way till Sukkot. I mean, at least I can talk for myself. It's not true, right? So what's the Yom Tov of Sukkot then? It's like as if we harvested the grain and then someone went and burnt it. And we never got to bring it into our house. So what's the Yom Tov of Sukkot? What's the celebration? Yeah, in theory, it should be that the grain is in our house, that we've actually followed through with our commitment. Okay, but it didn't happen. So what's the Yom Tov? The answer to that is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Elul Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Because what's Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Tshuva. Tshuva is the answer to that. Because actually, on the contrary, if there would be a Shavuos, and we would commit to do what Hashem wants, and we would never do anything wrong, that would be nice. We would be b'simcha, but it wouldn't be the true simcha. Why? Because as the Rambam says, why is a Baal Tshuva higher than a tzaddik? Why is a Baal Tshuva mean someone who sinned and done tshuva? Why is that higher than a tzaddik? As the Gemara says, the mokim shabali tshuva oimdim ein tzaddikin gemurim yichoyim lamicha. Why? Why is a Baal Tshuva higher than a tzaddik? Because a tzaddik has never tasted the taste of sin. So we don't know, in other words, his commitment has never been tested. We don't know what will happen if suddenly he's tested. But a Baal Tshuva, says the Rambam, is tam tam chet, has tasted the taste of sin, knows what it's like, and nevertheless doesn't do it, and changes his ways, and does tshuva. Now you know that that person is really committed, that they're really connected to Torah and mitzvahs. And we could say that even in a sort of a deeper way. Tshuva brings out that us and Hashem, us and Torah and mitzvahs are inseparable. It's not just something that we do. It's not just something that we understand. It's our very essence. It's our very identity. Why? Why does tshuva bring that out? Think about it. Why does someone do an aveira? Someone does an aveira because they don't care. I don't care what Hashem says. So I do an aveira, right? At that moment, at least. Called prikas oil. I removed from myself the yoke of heaven. So why suddenly today do I yes care? What happened yesterday? I didn't care. And suddenly today I woke up. Oh, I need to do tshuva. Why? Yesterday you didn't care. So why do you care today? The answer is because you always cared. As the Rambam says, that a Yid always wants to do what Hashem wants. Even as it says in Tanya, b'shas achet, at the time of sin, hoysa ba'omno ita yizbarich, your neshama, the essence of your neshama was always faithful to Hashem. Just that we have the Yetzirah that covers over that, and therefore we fail. But when we do tshuva, that is oirus, that awakening to do tshuva, what does that reveal? What does that express? That expresses that we were never disconnected. That us and the Torah, us and Hashem are one entity. As the Zohar says, Yisrael umal Yisrael oyraiso v'kuchabrichu kulachat. That the Yid, the Torah, and Hashem are one. We're inseparable. And therefore, even when I break the Torah, it's still my Torah. And therefore, I want to return to the Torah. And therefore, I want to do tshuva. That's why Sukkot is the ultimate Yom Tov. On the contrary, because we had Tisha B'Av, because we failed, whether a physical Tisha B'Av or a spiritual Tisha B'Av, because we did what Hashem didn't want us to do. We rebelled against Hashem. We were far away from Hashem. We did the Egel Azov. And then we woke up and we came back and we said to Hashem, we never really were disconnected. We always wanted to do what you wanted us to do. And therefore we're returning, we're doing tshuva, we're recommitting on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Then you can really have a sukkah. Then you can really say that you have the grain, that you have the Torah and mitzvahs. Why? Because that reveals and expresses and brings out how Torah, mitzvahs, and Hashem are one with us. It is who we are. It's so deeply engraved into our soul. It is our soul. It is our very identity. And that's why Sukkot is the ultimate simcha. It's the time when we go above all our external levels of intellect and behavior and emotions, and we tap into the deepest levels of the neshama. As we know, some people think that Tishrei is like Rosh Hashanah and Kippur is very serious, and then Sukkot is like a party, and Hashem gives us half of Tishrei to relax. No, on the contrary. Sukkot is deeper than Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's a revelation of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is when we discover that connection, where we discover that we have a neshama, which is why on Rosh Hashanah we blow shofar. What's the idea of blowing shofar? As the Baal Shem Tov explains, the idea of blowing shofar, it's the cry of the child, where we say to Hashem, like your child, we may not even know the language anymore, we may not know how to talk to you anymore, we've been through so many things, but we're still your child and we're crying out to you. And Hashem takes that. In other words, the connection is reignited from the very depth of that connection. What's Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is a day when we daven five times. You know the famous idea, Yid's neshama has five levels, as the Medrash says. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Yechida is the essence of the neshama. It's called yechida, which means one. It's one with Hashem. It's inseparable. It can never be disconnected. That's what happens on Yom Kippur, especially by Ne'ilah. By Ne'ilah, we tap into that fifth level of the neshama. And then when it comes Sukkot, we rejoice over that connection. It's not a party, chas v'shalom. On the contrary, it's much deeper. We reveal that connection. We celebrate it. We dance with it. We say l'chaim over it. We eat over it. We live with it. It becomes a part of who we are. That's when we move into the sukkah. It becomes our life. And that's why sukkah is the ultimate simcha. Specifically because Shavuos didn't work out so well. Specifically because Shavuos, the commitment was a little bit shaky at times. But then we came back, then we recommitted, and we revealed and expressed that this is who we are, this is our very identity. Which brings us to the ultimate of Tishrei, which is Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is not Chas V'Shalom, God forbid, is not a party. Simchas Torah is not a day to have fun. Simchas Torah is the ultimate day of connection between a Yid and Hashem. Because what happens on Simchas Torah? Simchas Torah, we take a Torah and we dance with it. But Simchas Torah, we don't put such a focus on learning Torah. Obviously, we always learn Torah. Yid always has to learn Torah. There's never a day that a Yid doesn't learn Torah, which is why we have Kriyas HaTorah and Simchas Torah as well. But that's not the focus. We don't dance during Kriyas HaTorah. We dance while the Sefer Torah is closed. What's the idea behind that? The idea behind that is to reveal that on Simchas Torah, we reveal a connection that we have with the Torah that even if I have never opened it up in my life, it's still my Torah. Why? Because I'm a Yid. And a Yid is always connected. Now, obviously, that's a terrible thing if you've never opened it up. That means you don't know your connection. You don't know who you are, right? But nevertheless, what it's trying to say is that even if Chas V'Shalom, you have a Yid who's never opened up the Torah in their life, that Yid is, it's still his Torah. Because the Torah and the Yid are one. They're inseparable. You can never disconnect them. And obviously, the point of that is that then we should open the Torah. And we should discover the Torah and learn the Torah and then make it a part of our life. But Simchas Torah is when we dance with the Torah closed to reveal that inseparable, that unbreakable bond that we have together with Hashem. Simchas Torah is like a rerun of Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur. Ne'ilah on Yom Kippur, we know there's a famous vart, Ne'ilah means to be locked. That's what Ne'ilah means. What it literally means is the gates are closing and they're about to be locked. But there's a more sort of a Hasidic sort of point of view there that says, no, not that you're locking the gates and you're on the outside. Ne'ilah is a time when the gates are locked and we're on the inside. We're locked in together with Hashem. It's a private audience between us and Hashem. But by Ne'ilah, we stand in front of Hashem and we cry and we beg and we beseech. Simchas Torah is a rerun of that. As we know, all the days of Sukkot, we bring different sacrifices corresponding to all the nations of the world. Simchas Torah is a day where we only bring one sacrifice. Par Echad, Ayil Echad. Why? Because it's about the Yid and Hashem. Simchas Torah, we're once again locked into a room together with Hashem, but instead of crying with Hashem, we dance with Hashem through holding the Torah. We hold the Torah and Hashem are one. So we're dancing with Hashem. It's the ultimate celebration, the ultimate oneness between a Yid and Hashem. And that's why it's the ultimate simcha. Because simcha is about going out of ourselves and connecting to something higher. And that's what simcha's Torah is. Discovering that we're not about our egos and our little petty problems, but it's about our connection to Hashem. That's what our identity is. That's what our essence is all about. So I think, just to end off, I think this message is especially relevant this year. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to say what's going to happen because maybe Hashem will change the plans. But it's very likely that we'll be Sukkot and Simchas Torah on our own, in our own houses, dancing with a sefer. You know, if you don't have a Torah, you have to take a Gemara or a Chumash and then dance, right? It's also Torah. And the question is, how do we do that? How is that Simcha, right? So we have to understand the Simcha of Sukkot and Simchas Torah is not about the atmosphere. Now, obviously, the atmosphere helps. It's tremendously helpful, and we want that atmosphere. But if we don't have it, we have to realize that's not what it's about. It's about something much deeper. It's about tapping into our own neshama, to our connection to Hashem. That's something that we always have, whether we're in a room with 1,000 people or in a room on our own. That connection is, it just is. And it's alive and it's burning. And the avodah of Sukkot, our job on Sukkot and Simchas Torah is to reveal that and celebrate that in any way, shape, or form. It's not limited. It's not only ignited when there are other people around and there's an atmosphere. That's external. That would be external joy. True simcha means it comes from who you are in your very essence, beyond your external feelings and understanding and ego. It's who you are. It's your connection to Hashem. And that exists always. That's not dependent on a time or place or situation or anything. It just is. So Hashem should help. And this ends this series of the Neshama of Tishrei. There's much more learning happening next week. Follow the emails and WhatsApps. But Hashem should help that we should celebrate Tishrei. We should go into Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Simchas Torah. Go through the journey. As we've discussed, Rosh Hashanah is all about davening. Daven like Chana, like with tears and with sincerity and with hope and bitachon. Like we discussed what the idea of tshuva is all about in Yom Kippur. And now we've discussed what the idea of simcha is all about on Sukkot. And Hashem should help that we should really experience a beautiful Tishrei in whatever shape or form He has planned for us. And He should give us the koyach to do that. Give us the koyach to transcend all the problems and all the issues and all the distractions and to really just focus on Hashem for a month. To be, Tishrei is a time where we're just with Hashem, we're always with Hashem. But Tishrei is a time where we're with Hashem in a very revealed and open way for a full month. And let's hope that we can experience that. And Hashem should bench every one of us. B'toich klal Yisrael, v'ksiva v'chzima toiva, a good bench to yor, a really good year, a shana tova in everything. And the ultimate simcha, as the pasuk says, simchas oylam al roishon, the ultimate simcha, where we'll totally go out of ourselves, and totally become one with Hashem, is the simcha of the geula amitis v'ashleima, the true geula from this terrible galus, and we'll all be in Eretz Yisrael for Beis Hamikdash, celebrating Tishrei as Tishrei should be properly celebrated. Shkoyach, everyone.